It's the changing face of America. What does America's demographic future look like? In our two-part series, is the American melting pot coming to an end?
The heart and soul of a nation beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
I mean, it is a global world, after all, and it is changing very, very quickly. And demographics are shifting around the world, and they're shifting here in America. What kind of an America do we want? It is an age-old question when it comes to the conversation of immigration. Every time that comes up, it's always about, well, you know, it becomes very political, and they politicize that conversation. Well, what kind of people do we want here? And you know, one of the big arguments up front I think we need to have is immigration to be forced on us? And why do we need all the immigration? I guess will be another thing we'll talk about in this two-part series we're going to do here. There's a lot of components to this big conversation, but the bigger question people hear is, what does the future look like for America? And so we bring you here a two-part conversation where we'll zone in on this future. What does it look like for America? And take on the various challenges of understanding. It's the infiltration, again, of refugees and illegal immigration, but it's also the infiltration of Islam. Sharia law is another major component. The demographic shift, if we're not careful here, it will be a demographic triumph, is what will happen. And it will be where Christianity will be overtaken. Now, when I put that out there, sometimes people say, I hear back, the argument is, no, Malcolm, God has this all figured out. That's not going to happen. And that's an argument I see here all the time that is thrown at me. And that I have to remind people, well, you know, it's not like God has it all figured out. We have something called free will. See, people forget this free will kind of thing. They don't realize that we all get free will. And that's what man has. We make the decisions as we go. I mean, God doesn't mandate all of this. He gave us all a brain, right? We have that free will to think it through and understand. And that's where I think we get off the path sometimes, people, from that. When people say, and people do always say when this conversation comes, anytime you say the word Christianity and you even question the challenges, there are those people who think they can really just put the car in neutral or just idle, and they can just idle us forward, and God's going to take care of everything. It takes a lot more than that. So this conversation here again, this two-part series, we're happy to have you here with us. And let me tell you, on the program here, we will have joining us IQ Al Razuli will be part of this two-part series. Ava Armstrong will be here as well, and Dr. Baruch Plettner will also be here. Well, there was an interesting op-ed just recently on America Out Loud that IQ Al Razuli had wrote about the demographic triumph of Islam over Christianity. And the thing is about these kinds of reads is they make you think, because it gets into the real details, the weeds, or the nitty-gritty, if you will, of the problem. And oftentimes, people, we have to do that. You can't just stay on the surface and solve the problem. You've got to get into the nitty-gritty. You've got to get into the weeds and understand the dialogue here. One of the more interesting things, as I bring on here IQ to start our conversation off here, is to tell you about, in this interesting op-ed he wrote, he talks about, some of you know this already, but some of you may not know, the most persecuted religious group in the 21st century are Christians by Muslims. And he goes on to say, who are relentlessly murdering or persecuting them in Africa and Asia without a single Christian country or even the United Nations attempting to stop this systematic genocide. Calls it a genocide. The silence of the world's Christian clergy is both shocking and deafening. Now, that point itself, IQ, I had put out on various social media forums to garner people's opinions and thoughts, what you say there, that it was shocking and deafening. And people agree with that point. But again, what I open it up with, but a lot of the people that are Christians always come back and remind me that God has this all figured out and handled. We need not worry. What do you say to that point when Christians say that back to you?
They're not Christian. God does not interfere in human affairs the way they are thinking. God helps those who help themselves. God never helps those who will not help themselves. History proves it for 10,000 years.
I grew up in the church as a young boy, and I always was of the condition and of the mindset that God helps those who help themselves. But IQ, a lot of the people around me had that other theory that God will figure it out. And I always find that I don't know if this comes across right or not, but it always appears to be the over-religious people. I don't know. There's some, you know what I'm talking about? Those kinds of people. Those are the people that I sense that always say, well, God has it all figured out. What you just said is key, that listen, God doesn't interfere with our decisions and what mankind does. I don't think people really understand this.
But they should. This is exactly why he created humans different from the other animals. If we're not, I'm using here the Bible from a biblical point of view. Okay. I'm not talking here to convert people or educate them in religion. We are discussing rational thinking. We have the ability to think rationally. It does not mean God will interfere. He doesn't have to interfere. He's got the whole universe. You look 13 billion light years in every direction. I don't think he is interfering in every single one of them. I'm talking from logic point of view. But if somebody who believes that God will help them without them helping themselves, good luck to them.
Yeah. Well, this is an argument that has come up quite a bit that I see in these circles. And anytime this argument's thrown out there, people really believe that God is going to heal and fix it all somehow. And I think until they really understand what we're speaking about, IQ, I don't think they're really going to understand the conversation we're going to have next, you know, because it's really left to us, isn't it?
Of course. I mean, how can they explain away the gulags where 25 to 30 million people were destroyed by the communists? Right. Or the 25 million who were exterminated in the death camps of Germany.
Well, wait a minute. A lot of people question why God didn't fix all that. I hear that a lot, actually.
So why are they asking the question of God interfering? Why didn't he interfere in these, which were crucial, where tens of millions of people were suffering? And they're talking now, oh, God will not solve any problem for you. That's simple. You don't want to believe it. It's your pleasure. This is the beauty of a free society. You have your view, I have mine. I'm not going to impose it upon you.
Right. At this point, I want to come back to later in the program, because I want to get Baruch and Ava to chime in on this conversation we're having right now about God's interference or not. I think it's a big point to start at. Let me go on and read this little short piece, IQ, that you say here. You say, in less than 30 years, there'll be no European culture or civilization left, since under Sharia, you talk about all their cathedrals, institutions, museums, arts, and anything associated with Christianity will be destroyed, as Muslims have been doing and continue to do for the last 1,400 years. And I guess you can take that same argument and put it forth here in America. Now, let's explain to people. Europe and the decimation of Europe is far further ahead than America. Explain to listeners now the difference between where Europe is at in this journey we're talking about here compared to America, please.
The number of Muslims in America is maybe 3%. The number of Muslims in Europe is 11 to 14%, depending in which country it is. The disparity in numbers is enormous. Something else. The rate of fertility of Europe is catastrophically small, irreversible. In America, it can be reversed. But we have to discuss this subject about abortions, about immigration, what kind of immigrants should come in. This is nothing to do with racism. This is nothing to do whatsoever with any racial factor into it. It's to do with facts and reality. We must face them. If you don't want to face them, you suffer the consequences. It's that simple. Europe had refused to face facts and reality, and they're suffering catastrophically.
They do use the racism as a really big argument, and the left is really good with that because that's their go-to argument, IQ, with any of this. You know, they immediately call, well, racism and you're a xenophobe. I mean, that's what they pegged on the president here, correct?
Correct, but my answer to all these leftist dimwits, prove me wrong. Don't attack me.
Well, they don't prove you wrong. What they do is they just keep beating the drum in the media. And that's another problem, is they own the media. They own the megaphone to society, right?
Correct. But we are talking to human beings, hopefully intelligent, independent-minded human beings. The media is corrupt. They know it's corrupt. We have watched them, and for the last 4 years, unremitting corruption, criminal behavior. Mm-hmm. They never, never tell the American people the truth. Never. I mean, the word is never. Right. And yet, you have CNN with millions of followers, MSNBC with millions of followers. I can't explain that to you.
Well, I can. As a media guy, I can explain it. If I keep telling you this blue ball is actually green, and if I tell you that every day, IQ, and I continue to tell you this blue ball is green, well, guess what? Just a few months down the road, you're going to believe this blue ball really is green.
Not me. Maybe somebody else.
Well, society, that's what they've done. They believe the blue ball is green.
Okay. I said it on your radio interview. I said it many times on other radio interviews. 47% of Americans are brain dead. I'm not retracting. I'm not going to apologize. Those who support the Democrat Party are brain dead. This is not racism. This is fact. They want, again, as I said, you need to prove me wrong. Mm-hmm. Muslims attack me. We shall kill you. We shall murder you. I always ask you, if you have the truth, why don't you find me guilty of telling a lie? Mm-hmm. Why threaten me? Yeah. If you have the truth, reveal the truth. Prove me wrong. In 22 years, I haven't had a single Muslim prove me wrong on anything.
Well, because the left doesn't ever deal with policy. They don't debate policy. They debate, again, racism, xenophobe, mental disorders, other things, but they never debate policy, IQ. You understand?
Okay, I understand that, but I'm not forgiving them. And I'm not going to retract or retreat.
Well, no, but they can't stand on, they cannot stand on a lot of these arguments is my point. And that's something we need to talk about on these programs here, because we're really talking about the core of the problem here, IQ. If we don't get through to this 47% and on certain days, I've got news for you, that 47 can easily swing to 51%. You understand?
Absolutely. True.
And that's how they win elections, okay? Yes. And it's those middle road people that are sort of not sure. They're wishy-washy on the real issues here. All right, listen. So I've got multiple points here we're going to come back to and talk about, but I want to get to the core of the argument now, and I want people's eyes to open up here. If they're not already bulged open here, they will after this next segment here, this next conversation, and that's this. One of the most fascinating things about this particular argument you put up about the demographic triumph of Islam over Christianity is the talking about the fertility rate. And you say here that in order for any ethnic culture to maintain itself for more than 25 years, at least one generation that is, the minimum required fertility rate has to be 2.11. Okay, that's children per family, 2.11 children per family. Now, anything less than 2.11 and the culture will most assuredly, slowly, but inevitably decline into final oblivion. Let's talk about, as we get into these numbers, now the numbers are going to be startling to you all when you hear some of the numbers we're going to share with you in a moment here, okay? But before we do that, IQ, when you look at, do this for me here. Take a moment. When we talk about that 2.11, how do we prove to people right now historically? Can you help me prove to people why that is a fact-based point of what you say here, the 2.11 children per family, where has this failed before in history to humankind?
Not easily, because there are no records kept. But I'll tell you what, the 2.11 means three, because nobody's going to have 2.11 child. Mm-hmm. The minimum required for reproduction to increase the population is three children per family.
Okay.
This is arithmetic, mathematic, like the nuclear explosion. 1, 2, multiply by 4, multiply 16, 16 by 16. That's how it increased exponentially. This is why we are now about 8.5 to 9 billion people. Why? By having more and more children. And the minimum required is definitely three children per family. 2.11 is a mathematical one, but in reality, it's got to be three children.
If we do less than that, three, we do, like you say, way less, one something, what happens?
You will have more and more older people and less younger people. And when you have more and more older people who need help and less younger people who can't provide the help, the society disappears. Slowly, but definitely goes.
See, the fact that it's doing it slowly, people don't really see it right away. That's it. Yeah, it's like anything. It changes over time, and you don't really think it's a big deal until you wake up one day and it's a big deal.
The example is you put the frog and you boil it slowly. It doesn't know it's going to die.
Yeah. All right, so looking at this fertility right now, the 2.11, back to the three per family we're saying here now. You then say, based on the historical records, no native culture was ever able to go back by itself at 1.9 children per family. And then you get into at 1.3 fertility rate, it is impossible. And you use the word impossible for any culture to reverse and or recover, because it would take up to 100 years to correct itself. And there's no economic model that can sustain a culture during such a long period of time. Now, it gets really fascinating at this point, very, very interesting with some of the examples. But let's get into the shocking numbers right now, IQ, so we can get on with this whole conversation. And that is, the numbers you say here on all these countries are, and some of them are way less than 2.11. So give you an example here. France is 1.9. Germany is 1.57. The UK is 1.74. Now, follow me, people, on the numbers here. We're in Europe right now. Italy, 1.34. You're hearing the numbers. Spain, 1.2. Denmark's 1.7. Ireland's 1.7. Canada's 1.6. Russia, 1.3. And I've heard a lot about that, actually, with Russia. They're in a very a fragile point of extinction, is what I keep hearing from folks. And then the United States of America is 1.74. So, IQ, when we look at all those countries and all those areas of the world, everybody is below 2.11.
Correct. But most important, I want them to know, These fertility rates are in 2017. These are not my figures. These are the figures of every nation we have just mentioned. It is so important our listeners understand this. This is not our figures. We didn't put them together. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is Google all these figures and you'll find out they are true.
So there's the argument there, people. So as we open up here with IQ Al-Razouli, so I just present to you multiple problems. Number one, the fertility rate that is required to sustain humanity, okay? And then you look at these numbers, which IQ just points out. Now, these are not just made up in thin air. These are the numbers that each country produces, and these are real. And he also points out, and by the way, these were a few years old already. Yeah, this is the last numbers we got, 2017. That makes sense. So they're worse than this now, is what he, I think, suggested a moment ago here. And so you have that in your mind. Now we talk about the big conversation, people. And, you know, we talk about, well, why isn't God fixing all this? You know, the interference of God. We talk about racism and xenophobia and why the left uses that. The argument gets interesting. I mean, why it's such a weak argument. Now, why they continue to use it, well, IQ makes a statement. He says, well, I think that 47% of Americans are brain dead. Some people would hear that and be highly offended. But then people, if they're not really paying attention to a conversation like today, I mean, how do you argue that? The people who want to stand on the sidelines and not get on the bus and watch life pass them by, how do you argue that? See, that's where the argument is. And then you've got the corrupt media, who has the megaphone to society in Western culture. Somehow in Western culture, the conservative right has let the powerful left own and buy and run all of those outfits throughout the West. And it's a pretty sad state. That's all part of an evil empire and probably part of an evil agenda, a globalist agenda, but one that is very, very evil. And then back to all of our Christian friends who say, not to worry, God has this all figured out. Yeah. I mean, it's not like we were all given the blueprint and a path for a perfect, beautiful world, right? I mean, we have to create, we have to make that happen. That's what our job is in civilization here. And friends, that's why this talk is so important. It's the fight of good versus evil. Again, this is central to that entire conversation I have with you every day of my life. The fight of good versus evil. And here we are. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than this conversation today, because you can talk about the rest of the problems, but what the hell do they matter if we're not here or if they've infiltrated and taken us over? But it even gets a little more interesting in just a moment when you hear who is taking us over and why they're doing that and what the components of that is. It gets a little more fascinating here. Well, so what does the future look like for America? We just spelled out some interesting things to you. We'll continue on with our two-part series here and be back with the Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Joining us here on the program again will be IQ Al Razzulli, Ava Armstrong, Dr. Baruch Plettner. And I want to bring Dr. Baruch Plettner on now and talk about some of the challenges, Baruch, we just spoke about a moment ago here. And that is, when you hear the numbers, we go right to the course of this fertility rate of 2.11, and then interesting dialogue with IQ a moment ago, and then you look at some of the numbers I gave to these other countries back in, again, these were stats from 2017, but nobody would be able to maintain their culture. In your opinion, as a man who studies all of this, what's your sense of that when you hear those fertility rate numbers, Baruch, and where we're at in Western society?
Yeah, well, a couple points. One is just since I come from the exact sciences, just a kind of a simple mathematical point. So if you think that every child would be, healthy and survive into adulthood and so on, then two people, a man and a wife, a husband and a wife, if they had two children, they would simply replace themselves. But in reality, even today, unfortunately, there are children that do not survive into adulthood. And so on average, you need a little more, 2.11, for example. That doesn't mean, of course, that the couple has a fractional child, but that, if you take 1,000 couples and they will have so many children, you divide by so on, that you get that fractional number. that same number, for example, 100 years ago was probably closer to 5 per each woman, per each family, because
we had more kids back then, you're saying, than we have today, right?
But they also died in childhood. So today it's highly unlikely that a child would be not survive till age 5 because there's good medicines and antibiotics and things of that nature. But and in the past, however, for example, 50-100 years ago, and certainly more than that, longer ago, you needed even more, substantially more. You maybe needed 5 children per one woman to keep the population at a steady level. And people had that many children. That's my point. Now, another point is more societal and psychological. Normally, you would expect that people want to propagate themselves. In other words, if people feel that they have something of value culturally, historically, then they want to bestow that. It's like a precious gift. It's like when you have gold, diamonds, a successful business, a farm, an apartment building. You want to bestow that on on the next generation. That's a very human instinct. So when you have something of value, you everybody knows that they're going to die. So you kind of hate for that to just go to naught, and kind of disappear when you die. You want to transfer it to that next generation. And in order to transfer it to the next generation, you have to have the next generation, right? But what's happening right now in the West, and especially in countries with a very low rate, like Italy, like Japan, which you didn't mention, but has a very low rate, like Russia, what's happening there is people feel like they have nothing of value. They have no culture. They loathe themselves. Not only don't they feel like they have something good, they feel like they have only bad stuff. For example, lots of Americans on the progressive left feel like they don't deserve to be in America because it belongs to the Indians. And the white people came in and they raped and they pillaged and they stole and they exterminated. And we are the next generation of those people. And so we don't even deserve to be here. Well, guess what? If you don't deserve to be here, you're not going to have any children, right? Then the climate hoax kind of couples into that. Why would you want to have children if the planet is dying and we are the ones killing it, right? So you're going to have children, they're going to keep killing the planet? No, you're not going to have children. So what happens is the West, and only the West, has become so self-loathing, so self-hateful, that the idea of having children had become hateful. And there's no point in continuing something when all you're continuing is nastiness, negativity, and guilt. So that's why people in the West are not having children.
Well, that's most interesting to me, the way you laid that out, that loathing, that people just don't have the simple decency and respect to be able to pass that on to the next generation. They lose the faith. Like you use the Russians as a prime example, and I think that's a very good example, actually. And yet, the Russian culture is very rich. And I'm talking prior to Soviet Union, before that, It was a very rich, right? I mean,
yes, absolutely.
Heritage. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And the thing is, in Russia, it's a little different than America. In Russia, what did them in was actually the Bolshevik Revolution. Because they did such a thorough number on their own culture. I mean, they exterminated their own culture in such a final way that right now they don't have it. They don't feel like they have any culture to transfer to the next generation. And I actually do believe that the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution substantially finished the Russian people. And they're kind of right now, they're basically just dead men walking, in a sense, culturally.
Well, if you look at the numbers of the fertility rate, they're the lowest that I have here available to me, at least at this moment.
That's,
I mean,
right.
Right close to that. Well, Spain is really low too, though. I mean, they're really down there.
And that's a Christian thing. The Spanish culture was completely identical and meshed, joined at the hip with the Catholic Church. Spanish culture was the Catholic Church. The Spaniards expelled Jews and Muslims in 1492, when they completed the Reconquista, the reconquering of the Iberian Peninsula, the first thing they did was expel non-Christians. And you know, as a Jew, I'm very sensitive to that. But I'm just saying, they felt so strongly about their culture, about their Christian faith, that they were going to go and do that, even though in economical terms, it was a disaster for Spain. Because for the Jews and the Muslims were among the more educated and more productive members of the Spanish society, and they knew that. Ferdinand and Isabella, the Spanish kings, king and queen, they knew very well that there would be an enormous economic price to pay for the expulsion of Muslims and Jews, and they did it nevertheless because their culture was more important to them. Well, we come today and their culture means nothing to them, and that's why they're not having children.
Baruch, what we've seen now is the influx of refugees and immigration throughout Europe. He has brought the Muslim population throughout Europe. And we've seen the transformation of Europe is what's happened. In fact, as we'll address a little bit later in the program, we're seeing that play out in Russia. We're seeing that played out in other European countries. The UK is having their troubles as well, with a population that is becoming more and more Muslim is... IQ had pointed out it's now in that 11 to 15% range compared to probably in America, maybe around 3% or so. And we'll get into what's happening with these numbers. But right now, I want to talk to you specifically, or have you speak, Baruch, about the persecution of Christians, in your view, that is happening really globally. We're talking now, this is a direct conflict of two really ideologies here, of Christians and really, you're talking Muslims here and Islam, and this this clash. Talk about that a moment, please.
Well, you know, one thing to remember is that the entire Muslim faith, in other words, Islam, is based on religious cleansing. In other words, the idea behind Islam from its very inception in mid-7th century was to expand beyond where it was started in the Arabian Peninsula, today Saudi Arabia, everywhere. And as it was expanding, forcibly convert and or kill those who wouldn't convert voluntarily. And that's what they did. So the idea the idea behind Islam is complete intolerance to other religions, especially pagans, but even Jews and Christians were not tolerated really and were subdued and so on. So this is nothing new. But there is a different thing that is new. Because if you went in history, not that long ago, let's say before World War II, in historical terms, not that long ago, 70, 75 years ago, there were multiple countries on this planet that called themselves Christian countries, and very powerful ones. England, France, Germany, and to a large extent, even America. So, if you know, Spain, so on. So the idea that Muslims would slaughter their Christian minorities at will was not really possible or tolerable because those Christian countries would intervene on their behalf. And a good example of that is actually Russia and the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire often tried to subdue ethnically cleanse and so on. It's Christian populations in the Balkans and places like Bulgaria, let's say Croatia, what used to be Yugoslavia. And the and Russian Empire, which was a very Christian country by definition, by how they themselves defined themselves, would come to their aid. And what's happening now, however, there is literally no country on the face of the earth, except maybe one or two, like for example, Poland comes to mind, that defines itself as a Christian country. So Christians, those vulnerable Christians that are inside of what Mr. Al-Razuli said, this Dar al-Islam, the countries of Islam, those Christians that are embedded in there are totally defenseless because there's absolutely nobody powerful on the face of this earth that's willing to come to their defense.
Yeah. And they're not standing up for them, obviously. That's not happening. And then we're seeing, so, you know, and a lot of this came to light a few years back, Brooke, is what was happening is you had the rise of the caliphate and you had, and I think where Americans really started to catch on to this thing is when you had the groups like ISIS and the Al-Qaeda's, but they were chopping people's heads off and they had them lined up along the ocean side and they would, you know, right. Those were the very graphic scenes we started to see where that's the first time that I think a lot of Americans in mainstream culture began to see, well, these people are barbaric.
Exactly. Yes. And America is a very interesting case because Europe, Western Europe is a bit of a basket case, as again, IQ mentioned before. It's really hard to see how Western Europe can, honestly speaking, survive what they have, what they have done to themselves. They are, it's like the Japanese seppuku or harakiri when you cut your stomach. Well, the moment you stick that sword into your stomach, you're already dead, you know, even though it may take a few more minutes. Europe is kind of in that situation. They've already stuck the sword into their stomach, and they're bleeding out. They're just not dead just yet. I'm talking about Western Europe. Eastern Europe is showing signs of life. America is a different situation. America is a larger country, much larger, and it has a stronger, more resilient, and more diverse Christian tradition. And that is, there's some hope there.
Okay.
But it's time for Americans to wake up to that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that hope now. Let's bring on Ava Armstrong and talk about the hope within the Christian nation that America is, Ava. In order for us to maintain this now, when we talk about, with what he just put out there, when you look at Europe, for instance, and the influx of refugees that have changed that landscape, as he says, now, a lot of that is because of the current day leaders you have, like Angela Merkel, like Macron, these leaders that have, pushed the no walls, no borders, no nothing, open up Europe, and then they've taken a lot of these refugees in, and there's been a lot of games being played in Europe, and that's been, I think, part of where everything is gone down. When he says America's in a different position here, basically because of our Judeo-Christian roots and who we are as a nation, never should we take that for granted, obviously. There is a demographic shift that is happening here in America. Now, IQ points out in his very interesting piece and article here that, again, our rate right now, a fertility rate, is only 1.74. It's not enough. So 100 years, if you come back 100 years from now, I think he will tell us we're going to be in a heap of trouble if we don't start to do something. What do you see as the biggest problems we're dealing with in this demographic shift we're having?
I think a lot of it has to do with abortion and childlessness being very acceptable as a lifestyle now. Actually, there are articles, many articles written about, you know, not having children and how much happier you can be.
And there is truth to that, by the way. I mean, let me just say, I mean, I hear what you just said and said, well, oh my God, how could you? And I know I have people I know who decided not to have children. And people say, well, you're very selfish. But I mean, but in order to maintain society, we kind of have to have these 2.11 kids that Baruch said you average out over 1,000. IQ says, yeah, it's about 3 kids per family. But there are those who didn't, and for those who didn't, you almost have to have 6 or 7 in the next family, right?
Exactly.
Right.
What is our point? What is the point of my existence? I guess that's what we really need to get to in this discussion, because we're talking about God and Judeo-Christian principles in America.
Right.
Our laws in America are based on biblical principles, okay? Thou shalt not kill is one of them. In the Bible, it also says, be fruitful and multiply. So God talks to us through the Bible, through the biblical verses, and we are often, you know, just, it's a beautiful thing. Life is to be cherished. Life is something beautiful. Life is something, procreation is the point of my existence on this earth. That's how I believe, okay? If you're Christian or Judeo-Christian, you have the same belief. And yes, America has this wonderful Judeo-Christian underpinning, and that may save us in the end, but we're really sliding backward because, you know, we're almost to 62 million abortions in this country. And I won't belabor this point because, you know, it's already It's already done. 1973, the big feminist wave came in. You've come a long way, baby. You know, all of that kind of attitude, it took away from a woman, I think, because a woman is the childbearer, and she's usually the person who tends to the children. And in a loving family, I mean, I can't imagine anything more beautiful than that. It's just wonderful to procreate, and that is actually what will save America.
You know, it's funny in an odd sort of way, Ava. I remember growing up with those families who would have, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. In fact, I have a friend who has, I believe he has like 13. It was, what do they call that, a baker's dozen or something, you know, right? And had like 13 children or whatever. And I thought, oh my God, this guy must have spent so much time in the bedroom. I mean, what a life that is, huh? But I thought, and some people would say how selfish that was that he would have 13 children. And I thought about that often. And it's funny talking to you all today and discussing more of this demographic shift here in America. These were actually probably the smarter ones. They used to always say, don't use birth control. You're a good Catholic family that way, remember?
Right? Yes.
That was part of what they said.
My mom is one of 13 children. She was one of 13.
So oh, then you know what I'm talking about.
I do, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the beauty of that is you have children that get older and they help take care of the younger ones. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing, kind of like the Waltons on TV. Remember the Waltons?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting when you look at the size families, and the size families have changed over the past 50 years. So those families that used to have 6, 7, 8, 10 children are now probably having a couple, 2, 3, and some, maybe the larger families are 5 or 6. There are exceptions to the rule always, as you just said, certain people. But it's funny because I used to always think those were the selfish ones, but according to this conversation here, those are the ones that are actually heroes that are saving our society in a kind of odd sort of way, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. It's to be, I think, childbirth and child rearing and all of that, having a family, that is something to me that is so precious and so important. It rises above everything else. It rises above my wanting a new car or my, you know, wanting a diamond ring, let's say. I mean, you know, that is something when you have children, that's a permanent thing. I mean, as you age and you become older and your children grow and you have a different relationship with them, but it's just so beautiful. So the point of my existence is to believe in God and to be fruitful and multiply. And I think more people should get back to those basics.
And then when you look back at like America right now, and you're seeing some of the signs that we talked about, like you're seeing the rise of socialism, or AKA communism, right? And then you're seeing, you have Muslim candidates in Congress that didn't put their hand on the Bible. They put it on the Quran because they worship Muhammad and Allah and Sharia law is that game plan. And that becomes another really interesting discussion point that some people are just saying, well, it's never going to happen here. In fact, I know a lot of people who believe, who really say and believe it's never going to happen here. And as IQ was saying when we started the program, well, people always think that way until it's too late because, he used the example, the frog in the boiling water. The frog doesn't even know it's boiling until it's too late. And then it succumbs to the injuries of that boiling water. And maybe that's a simple example, experiment to use over time, but it gets the point across, people, that all of these problems, they're inheritable, is that we tend to ignore them, or we just move forward, or some people just don't think it even matters. They pass it on to the next generation. You know, when you think about all this and you think about the evolution of man and you think about the evolution of humankind and humanity as a whole, and you wonder where our planet is in all of this and what happens ahead. And interestingly, the risk that is involved in all of this, it is quite a conversation, isn't it now? You know, think about all of that, the fragility of life. But the way it just hangs on the balance, you know, it's like, what does that look like ahead if we continue down this path of self-destruction? Well, as we continue on with our two-part series here, we'll take a quick pause and want to talk more about the influx in America here and get to the core of this debate and discussion and what really needs to happen ahead. It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So as you see the culture shift in America here, and you see the demographic shift of what's happening in this country here now we're speaking about, let's bring it right straight to America. You know, we're seeing for the first time members in Congress that are showcasing their beliefs, the hijab, and they put their hands again on the Quran. And again, you have those who say, well, we're a diverse nation. We're a culturally unique nation. People would argue what that's supposed to mean to be an American. How concerned are you with what's taken place in America, this cultural shift that's happened? Well, I'm going to say this, over the last 10 years, since the early part of the Barack Obama administration, talk to us from your vantage point about what you see in America with that shift.
I think we're being invaded in a sense. Why I say that is because the Muslim folks that come here and they decide not to follow our laws, they're allowed to live in groups and to practice their own laws. And that's actually a country within a country when you start thinking about that. I personally do not think anybody should come to America and not follow our laws. And one of our laws is that a man can only marry one woman or one wife. So in Muslim culture, it's common for a man to have four wives. And of course, if they impregnate those wives with five or six children each, then you've got quite a large population forming. And again, these people, many of them, do not follow American laws. They follow their own. So I have a real problem with that. That's how a country can be taken over in a very short period of time.
I think that argument comes back to now, what does it mean to be an American, Ava? What does it mean to be an American, and what sort of rights? Like, there was a time when, well, you're supposed to go through these classes and these series of understanding and studies. In fact, I've seen where legal immigrants actually know more about our Constitution and our origins and our framers and founders than Americans who are brought up in the school system.
Well, you're called a nationalist now if you really love American culture. The way our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. Our laws on the books are mostly from Judeo-Christian principles. And I think America's fine, just the way it is. I mean, I would like to have everybody that comes here, mm-hmm. and a lot of Latino immigrants that come here, they have Judeo-Christian principles as well. So they blend in rather well in our society, and they're multiplying at larger rates because they have, you know, a Christian belief that they should be fruitful and multiply, and they don't believe in abortion as much as other people do in the country. So I think looking at different immigrants that are coming here, which ones fit our culture the best? Which ones will abide by our laws? This is something that America really needs to struggle with and answer in a very short time. We need to have this conversation.
Yeah, and as we see, the clock is ticking, and we're losing ground here quickly at what's happening here as this demographic shift and cultural shift is happening here in this nation. You see, America is a melting pot of a lot of different ethnicities and people that can become an American. I mean, it's the one place around the world that you can become an American, where it's hard to become a Russian or a Frenchman or a Jew. I mean, it's, you know, that's we're a mutt, we're a melting pot. And you see, so there's the risk factor in being an American. because even though they go through these different things, a lot of people, as Ava was saying, they want to bring their culture with them and they want to worship. Listen, I know there are cities and towns in our country right now that are playing on the loudspeakers. You know what I'm talking about, IQ, and they're pushing that culture out there and the mosque and the imams. Talk about that a moment here, what's happening in this country.
First of all, the definition of culture is wrong. They don't have a culture. They come from every nation on earth, from every race on earth. What culture is that? They have a belief system. It's a cult belief system. Their God, Allah, is not the same as the God of the Bible. I know it sounds shocking, but I dare anyone to prove me wrong. Again and again, I say it public. I have CAIR, C-A-I-R, Council of American Islamic Relations, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. I have challenged them a million times to debate me, to prove me wrong. 12 years later, not once. Why? Why not debate me? Islam is not a culture. It's a belief system. They call it a religion. It has absolutely nothing to do with the Abrahamic religion. It has nothing to do with the Judeo-Christian religion whatsoever. Sharia is the nemesis of everything in the Bible. Sharia is the nemesis of everything in the American Constitution.
Islam, you say in your piece, actually this article now, you say it is the fastest growing religion is what you say here. And you talk about the enormous birth rates they're having in the Muslim population. Talk about why that is and how that's working out for us.
Okay, simple. While Americans and Europeans are having two or less children, Muslims have 5 to 7 times what Europeans and Americans have. First of all, they actually believe in the multiplicity of children because they copied it also from the Bible. Go forth and multiply. But they quadrupled it. Why? Because Muhammad told them to the men, you can have 4 wives and you can have as many concubines as you want. And the concubines also can produce children, obviously. So, as I said, if you have 4 wives, each one producing 5 children, I mean, 5 times 4, that's 20. The Americans are having 2. That's 1 family, while the other one is 20, that's 10 times more. Second, Muslims come to Europe, they come to America, and they bring Sharia with them. They are allowed to proselytize, that means convert not Christians to Islam. If a Christian is trying to convert a Muslim, they kill them. It's a penalty of death. It's a one-sided affair. Everything I'm talking about is one-sided to the advantage of the Muslim. Why would the Muslims in the 21st century need a blaring call for praying? Why? Why would any American, a patriotic American, a law-abiding American, allow such a thing? In Muslim countries, a Christian cannot even peel a bell. They cannot go out wearing a cross. Yet they come here and they wear the Muslim dress and they start shouting and screaming and attacking anybody who contradicts them. They want to murder anybody who makes a picture or a joke about Muhammad. Muhammad was not God. Blasphemy is against God. It's not blasphemy when you curse Jesus or Moses. Never. But when you curse God, that is blasphemy. But they made Muhammad equal to Allah. And he is equal. Why? Because Muhammad and Allah are one and the same. Again, it sounds outrageous.
When you're talking about, you were talking about childbirth and the amount of children they're having, let's also not lose sight of something else, IQ. There's also the disrespect toward women in that culture. I don't think a lot of people really understand the disrespect. They don't look at women are not an equal or anything even close to it there. They're more of a possession, are they not?
Of course, I had an article with you. 750 million women in Islam are treated one little step up the escalating hierarchy of humanity than domestic animals. They are possessed by them. They are not allowed to be educated. They are, because Muhammad said that the woman has half the brain of a man. Why would a woman have half the brain of a man?
Wow.
Who decided that?
Muhammad. And a lot of them get beat up. I mean, I've seen videos online and graphic images of these women being completely abused and slaughtered almost.
Correct. Because if you go to Memri, M-E-M-R-I, Middle East Media Institute, and look at their YouTubes, they have thousands of them, of Muslim clerics telling the world that beating a Muslim woman is an act of mercy. Don't laugh. I don't laugh about this subject.
Well, no, there's nothing to laugh about.
I'm saying, it's not a laughing matter. Mm-hmm. It's a death and life matter. Our death, their life. What do they tell you, Muslims? Mm-hmm. We love death, while you Christians and Jews love life.
Right. There it is right there. That's the crux of it right there. There's the argument that IQ puts out there. You see, we're talking about a complete different belief system, people, where, you know, if you're living with the idea that dying is a good thing and that you want to get to Allah because, you know, a whole bunch of reasons. In this whole conversation we're having today, where the rubber really meets the road on this, is this demographic shift and cultural change that has happened as a worldwide phenomenon, but it's a phenomenon right here in America. And what's happened here, to put this in a capsule version from me to you, is this. Our politicians in America, both at the federal level and the local levels, have become entirely way too PC. And what they've done is they've taken our brand of America and they've shifted and used it against us. Now, you have to question your sometimes what their motives are. What is the outcomes these people are looking for? Well, if you look at all the stats and the things we're talking about today with you, it's not to maintain the American culture. So what is it exactly? You know, they allow these various cultures, including Islam, they get all kinds of rights. They can teach in the schools and nobody says anything. Your local leaders say nothing. Your federal leaders say nothing because that's what we're supposed to do here in America. Lie down as we give them the rights to bring their belief system in. It takes over our culture. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that in various pockets all over America. In fact, you're seeing that in places you hear a lot about Dearborn, Michigan. And there's a lot of communities in the Midwest and actually from coast to coast that have now become very radicalized, I'll say. Very radicalized. The culture's radicalized. And then they're hiring radicalized politicians. That's the door into Congress. And then I know there are many more running this next election cycle. We have more Muslims on the ballot coming into 2020 than you will ever believe or imagine. And so the conversation continues, right? We'll pick up all of this, friends, on part two of this conversation here with IQ Al Razuli, Ava Armstrong, Baruch Plettner. Join us back here tomorrow for part two. Is the American melting pot coming to an end? Friends, thank you for joining me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.